I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
And now for something completely different, Stocks and Jocks with the Chief. Take it.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Jimmy on the board. S&P futures up 2, NASDAQ futures up 59 as we can continue to rack it up. Every time there's a deal we didn't think we needed, we go up. It's an interesting phenomenon. Now Trump is deciding to visit the Fed today. I can only imagine what a fiasco that's going to be. Do we have Lou?
Yes, we do.
Good morning.
How are you, bud?
I'm still fighting a cold, but doing okay.
Summer cold is a different animal. Remember that commercial?
I do remember that animal because it hits you in the summer when you've got things to do. How is it that we can remember jingles from 50 years ago?
They were good jingles.
I guess so. Speaking of notable phrases, do you know where the "and now for something completely different" comes from?
No, I know Paul Harvey was page 2.
It's a cachet line of Monty Python's Flying Circus.
Okay.
When the actual television program was running on BBC, I think it was a BBC sponsored program. I think that was the only way they could get away with full frontal nudity on camera.
They did a lot of that with Benny Hill as well.
Yeah. So anyway, they had a series of sketches, and that was their transition. And now for something completely different.
Well, you know,
said with an upper class British accent, so it always sounded intelligent.
Well, yeah, I knew a lady. She's been passed for a while. Talk about a strong lady, Lou. She must have had, I don't know, 5 or 6 kids. She marries this guy who's got like 4 kids. The guy turns out to be a bum. So she tosses him out, keeps the kids, right? Puts all 10 of them through school, and was one of the first women major marketing people. And 3 things I know you'll remember were hers. GE brings good things to light. Remember that one?
Oh, yeah.
How do you spell Kraft? Kraft. And the telephone, reach out and touch someone. Those were all hers.
Wow. Those are big ones.
Yeah, those were, I mean, at the time, they were huge.
She was a mad woman, huh?
Oh, yeah. Well, she was, tell you what, I met her and she had to be 80-something. You still listen to her.
You know? I would.
Yeah, I mean, so what's up, other than the cold, what's up in the wars of the world? We don't hear about much of those and all the other stuff going on.
A new one started last night. Thailand and Cambodia are in a shooting war right now.
Really?
It's not strategic. It's over a border area. Apparently, the fighting's been going on there since the end of May. They had a cross. So, like, the French drew the borders, just like the British drew the borders in the Ottoman Empire. The French drew the borders in Southeast Asia, and I think the Thai-Cambodian border was established in the early aughts, early 1900s, like 1905, 1907, something like that. Anyway, not that I'm an expert on that area of the world, I'm not, but I've read about it. When they drew the border, the Thais have been complaining about the border ever since. And of course, remember, those are at the time were 2 kingdoms. Apparently there was every now and then they get some flare up over this area, and the other day they had a shooting at the end of May. They had a shooting, a cross border shooting. Some Thai soldier apparently was killed, and last night they began shelling, they began firing across the border and shelling into Cambodia. Cambodia returned fire. And this morning, Thai Air Force launched strikes on the Cambodian border positions. So we're up to Air Force bombing now.
We have any idea what's on this border? We're talking about the middle of nowhere or middle of a rice paddy? Or are we talking about oil wells on one side and the other or what?
I hesitate to say it's in the middle of a rice paddy, but...
Well, what I'm saying is it ground that anybody cares about? Is it oil, huge oil wells on both sides that people want, or is it just frontier, I guess, for lack of a better term?
I don't think, I'm just pulling up to see if I can see a map. I don't think it's any, I don't think it's any, like, you know, urban area or anything like that. It's obviously, they're obviously people there, but
no, we're talking Iowa major, against Nebraska.
I mean, I don't think their real estate's especially valuable. I think what they're fighting over is, you know, border, and then there was some provocation and back and forth, and so now they've escalated. But I'm looking at the news.
Okay, what I want to ask is if you and I were walking along there, we even know where the border was.
Was
it a river?
Yeah, I'm sure. No, I don't think it's a river. I'm sure there's a river in the area somewhere, but it apparently been a long time bone of contention.
So, I don't even know who the hell's running those places over there anymore. Do you, after the Vietnam thing? We kind of talk about ignoring a whole area of the world. Well, and once we were gone, nobody cares, right?
The two countries. I mean, the two countries are. Thailand's got a reasonably strong economy. Cambodia, of course, is primarily agricultural. But in any event, it's, you know, just what we need. You know, another shooting war between, you know, two.
Well, China's going to have to take a side, and then, which means somebody else is going to have to take a side. I mean,
yeah, I don't know what China's going to do. They'll probably stay out of this, at least initially.
Are they buddies with either one or not the other? I have no idea.
You know, I think China's worked on trying to jack up its influence in Thailand. The Cambodians, of course, had a kind of bad experience with communism, so I don't think they're real excited about this.
And Vietnam just sitting there hoping it doesn't get any bigger.
Well, Vietnam has been actively courting the West, and they are not fans of the Chinese. We have started to negotiate more of a presence in Vietnam. The last I read.
Well, it's hard to keep track of all this, isn't it?
Yeah, I'll be over there next year. I can give you a report when I come back.
Really? Well, good. What? I've been listening to, you know, we've been talking a little bit about it every day, but this is just one guy doing some investigations on all this Epstein stuff, and I'm, you know, on eight different levels, which I think it sort of is, and a lot of people are pissed off on one level, other people are pissed off on another level. Guys like me just have a million questions. Lou, if you follow the money without even accusing anybody of anything other than being creeps, because I don't know if anybody actually did anything with these young girls or not. I would never say, because I don't know. But the fact that you're hanging around...
He was convicted of trafficking.
Yeah.
Epstein was.
Well, did you listen to this guy from Israel, who was Begin or Bahan or somebody or other? He was prime minister for a little while. But he also was head of their... I don't think he was... They didn't say Mossad, but they said some kind of...
You're not talking about Menachem Begin.
Baruch is his name.
Yeah, I think he's the former head of the Shin Bet.
What's that?
That's their internal police.
Yeah, he was something. I didn't think it was Mossad. So he takes 32 flights on Epstein's private airplane. He's quick to say most of them were with his wife. And somebody said, "Well, why are you hanging around with a convicted sex offender?" And he gives the lamest. Well, he'd already paid his debt to society. He's fine now. And I'm going, what are you talking? It's amazing. And then I dig into more of this guy from Columbus. Was it Wexman, the guy?
The answer is I hung around with him because the president, the once and future president of the United States was running around with him. And I thought, well, if he's okay for this guy, he's probably okay for me.
Lou, it wouldn't have been okay for you and me. You and I wouldn't have been there.
No, but that's the answer.
Yeah,
he's being asked a political question. You know, why are you doing this? The first answer should be, well, it's none of your business what I was doing, but that's not going to satisfy anybody. So the second answer is, look, I'm not the judge of everybody. I don't know the guy. He's running with Bill Clinton after his conviction. He's running with Bill Clinton. He's running with a bunch of other dignitaries from the American, you know, business establishment. So I figure, well, if he's okay with these guys, I don't know what he was doing, but these guys are vouching for him, so I'll travel with him.
Well, how does this guy from Columbus get all his dough? Well, he was Victoria's Secret, and he was a Abercrombie and Fitch, right? Was it Wexman?
I have not followed this because this does not, and this particular scandal is not the kind of scandal that I think is undermining the constitutional function of the country. I'm following the other scandal, which is, in my opinion, much more important, and that's the attempt to overthrow Trump in his first administration.
Well, you guys keep believing Trump on this, but Lou, when you dig into this at all on money, I think you don't have as much of an interest as I do, and listeners know this. I'll flat out tell you why, because people scrutinize us and the government every second, damn near. And if you open up an account at PTI and you wired in money, if it doesn't come from a bank with your name on it, we have to do an Interpol check on you. We have to do all this stuff. And by the way, if you wire money out, it better go to your bank. It can't go to your son, unless whatever, you show up and.
Oh no, I've done wire transfers. I am astounded at the level of scrutiny on those things. I understand why it's there though.
And yet, Epstein has 4,100 in one account of over $1 billion, and nobody knows anything about him. The difference in how, and I'm reading about this guy in Columbus, which evidently is the guy that gave Epstein all the dough. Now, what he had on him, I have no idea. He evidently gave him the place in Manhattan, which is now worth, or was, $75 million. Now, my first thought is, gee, did he pay gift tax on that? Was that his money? Was that Victoria's Secret shareholder money? What did that wire transfer look like? So he gives him a huge house right behind him in Columbus, and evidently there's a place in New Mexico. How is it the guy's never been, with all the crap with Epstein, the first conviction, the second conviction, all this stuff, how does nobody ever talk to this guy, Lou? Why did you give this dude $100 million?
I am presuming that eventually this will come out as to what the connections were.
It's coming out on every little podcast. Everybody has a little jewel in there. They come from somewhere.
Well, I mean, and that's one of the reasons I'm not paying a lot of attention to it. It's a sideshow right now.
But how does anybody?
But
respect,
I agree with
law
you.
Enforcement in this stuff.
I agree with you, and I do want to see this thing vitiated or aerated, because there's obviously something weird going on. I mean, Acosta, the lawyer for the government in 2007 at that U.S. trial, and I think I mentioned this last week. Acosta says he backed off because Epstein was, so he was told Epstein was connected to the intelligence agencies. Well, I mean, I presumably he didn't make that up. Somebody told him that. Okay, what's the story? We don't have any information on that. I'm still waiting to see what was the, who told Acosta that, and what was their basis for understanding that. It stinks to high heaven.
Well, Lou, it appears that he becomes buddies or acquaintances with this Wexman guy, who's got nothing but money, right?
And Tom, I think the guy is probably either an incredibly high-functioning sociopath or a legitimate psychopath, and you know how well those people are genetically programmed to adapt to these kinds of relationship situations.
The dude gives him. We're not talking about you opening up an account at PTI and giving me limited power of attorney to do covered rights on your spider position. The guy, after 2 years, gave him total power of attorney over his entire operation. He could borrow money in his name. He starts contributing to all these Israeli causes, which gets him his connection with the Israeli people. It's like you read this, the chain of this. How could we have a CIA and not knowing that this all of a sudden is starting to happen? Who are these people giving all this money to these guys?
So the short answer is, by this time we know that NSA, post 9/11, NSA, the National Security Agency, is monitoring every email, every phone, cell phone text, everything going international, everything going back and forth between the United States and third world countries or foreign countries. So presumably his communications contained at least one or two trigger words, if he's talking to the Israelis, that would have brought it to the attention, which of course would have alerted then CIA, FBI, whoever. So I don't, I mean, I agree with you. I don't know what the situation with his initial benefactor is. Presumably, this will eventually come out.
This guy seems like he's bulletproof. I mean, how can you not even talk to him after all these years?
Well, and so this goes to my what we talked about last week. This goes to my theory that, you know, I don't believe he killed himself. I know that's the formal whatever, but the way he died and the circumstances under which he died, with the, you know, the guards being asleep and the video being turned off or inoperable or whatever, you know, all of that tells me that if in fact it was an assassination, it was an assassination from outside the power structure, somebody who did not co-opt or did not have the power or the influence necessarily to co-opt what was happening inside that prison. Otherwise, they would have killed him in a different way, a less obvious way. So, there's something there. We just don't know who it is. I do believe, though, that whatever it is, if it was that damaging to Trump, it would have been leaked by now. I mean, the Democrats would have leaked it. But, I mean, is it conceivably possible that whatever it is, it's so unbelievably horrible that it implicates, you know, our entire government?
My view on Trump in this situation is that I don't think he was ever at the island. I don't think there's anything necessarily on him with a 14-year-old.
Well, not after whenever it was he kicked him out of Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah, I mean, not after, because I think then they had a... there's also somebody posted an interview of Epstein talking about Trump. That's bizarre. He said he called him the most despicable human being he ever met. Everybody was ever a friend. He'd befriend it only until he could screw him on a business deal, then they were out.
Okay.
You know. But
So you know, but that shouldn't be a surprise.
No. I mean
Trump blackballed him in South Florida. So
I don't, what I'm saying is, but as you read the stuff, it's if you're not so behind Trump that you get rid of any sort of you just forgive everything he did, the creep factor is huge. All these little beauty pageants and stuff. See, I was never, I'm probably the wrong person to judge there, Lucas. I always thought that stuff was creepy. Even when I was 18, I thought it was creepy.
You thought what was creepy?
14-year-old girls and beauty pageants and stuff. I mean, I thought.
Well, yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously these guys
didn't.
You
want to see something? let me just pitch something else out. You want to see something creepy? Go to a bodybuilding, a big bodybuilding tournament, where you've got men and women competing in their separate categories, and watch how, you know, I now know 4 or 5 bodybuilders, and you know, for these people the focus is, you know, body development, muscle development, you know, and showing off what you can do with focus and some dedication. But these places objectify, they don't objectify the men, but they objectify the hell out of the women. And it's crazy. When I went to the first time I went to a tournament, I went, what? Why?
Yeah, it's...
Why? Well, how is this? This isn't objectifying bodybuilding. This is objectifying sex, at least for the women. And it's astounding how different the focus foci of the competitions are.
Well, yeah, they can start a week.
I thought I mean, so
you know what's starting to leak a little, Lulu, is that the antics over at the catalog of Abercrombie and Fitch with the guys is almost as bad.
That's always been the case.
See, I didn't know that. Right? This is all new to me. I'm from the South Side, Lou. This is all new to me. The idea that Trump and 8 other people, by the way, 2 or 3 of them are women, are sitting there in this hotel, and these girls are coming in at age 14, these little leotards, and they're like performing in front of them. Going, I couldn't stand that for a second. And yet, it wasn't all guys. It was a couple of women there.
It's pretty creepy. And I mean, there was that whole. So short answer, yeah, it's creepy, and I've always wondered about it, and I have worked with guys who, you know, in their 40s and 50s were dating, you know, 18 and 19 year olds.
I don't get that.
I just, you know, you just go, oh, okay. I guess the comment is, you know, more power to you. But it is strange. It is creepy.
But it's not just that I'm not blaming a 14 year old. But Dr. J and I went over to Europe to give some lectures, and we go to this German festival, which I'd never seen anything like that, but it was really something. Big, huge, you know, streets with the cobblestones and the whole bit, and they got the beer tents out there. And of course, no self-respecting German would have a beer in a paper cup, so you got the big steins, even though you're out in the street. And all of a sudden, you know, with all these girls from the bank, and they were you'd have loved them. They were characters. Boy, talk about strong women. And all of a sudden, these three couples come by. You know, like an old dude and, you know, younger. I mean, she wasn't 15, but the girls were early 20s and the guys are 60. And I go, boy, you know, I like the way you guys do stuff over here. There's these family kind of things. And she goes, what do you mean? I said, all these kind of father-daughter couples. And she looks me right in the eye and she goes, women in Germany like men with money and the old guy's got the money. What's your problem?
Yeah.
I go, yeah. I just sort of didn't expect that one, Lou.
It works the same way here, unless you're unfamiliar with the sugar daddy concept.
I would have a real problem with my daughter in one of these things.
Anybody would, but yeah, don't get me started on this.
But you know, it seems like it's a regional thing. Yeah. Go where you want to go with this. Let me say one thing though. I think Trump, who normally has an amazing read on his people and people in general, I mean, the guy has a skill set. You can't deny him that. He's fighting, and the news people, the creatures around him, keep talking about this disclosure and how these things have to be published. Lou, I got news for the president. His people don't want him to drop him 100,000 documents that they have to read. He wants, his people want these dudes in jail. They want them prosecuted like they would be prosecuted.
They're fighting
over his disclosure. The last thing,
the reason he's fighting them on this, or he's that this is being, so the press has now determined that this is a lever that they are a wedge they can drive into his base. They think, so they're. They're going full court press on this. They are absolutely ignoring the stuff that came out yesterday and the day before from Gabbard on the, what, as I said at the time when we were on the show, we were talking about it on the show, I said it was a coup attempt. That's what it looks like. And they are ignoring that. And that's what's infuriating Trump, because what's happening with the Gabbard documents that are coming out, and these are not Trump's words, you know, I mean, he's furious, but these are the words of the people, Brennan and the rest of them, who were playing at this, who were putting this thing in motion. And so his focus is on that, because this is validating what he was saying back in 2017.
So we're going to put Obama in the same cell as Trump for the January 6th?
What I hope they do with Obama is impeach him roll that out and force that information out.
I don't think any of these people for the last 20 years, maybe since Harry Truman, want a full dossier of what they've done, because they seem like they all are messed up to beat the band.
I'm not in this loop on that. I want that stuff fully disclosed, and I want the ICA report that came out yesterday was absolutely damning in terms of how they were orchestrating this, and that needs to be put in front.
Are you going to impeach Ronald Reagan too for the Iran? I mean, where are you going to impeach Trump for January 6th?
I mean, if they want to go, the whole thing with Iran-Contra was pretty well out in the open when Reagan was president, and they didn't go after him then. So I'm not worried about Reagan.
You know, I think this, you're a lawyer. Answer me this question, please.
Tom, that didn't involve a coup attempt.
Well, answer me this question. Do any of these people, the thing that strikes me, you know, you're the attorney, the thing that strikes me, no matter how much they claim to dislike each other, Trump and Biden, they and the senators, how much they do, they never go after anybody. They never actually say, this bleep took all this money from this pharmaceutical firm, and look what he put in this bill in the committee he's in, and look how horrible this is, and everybody else voted for it, and we should you know, put this guy's picture on the wall of the subway. It never happens.
To the extent, well, they prosecuted Ted Stevens for something very similar to that. So they do, when the Justice Department has the goods, they will go after people. Now, whether they, you know, ultimately get it into a prosecution, I don't know. I mean,
they don't even kick him out of the Senate.
Ted Stevens?
I'm saying, in general, they could kick half of them out, probably.
Well, I can't go all the way back through every corruption case. But in this case, you know, there is a chance, at least I hope, that they will find actionable stuff. The big problem with many of these situations is that there's not the political stuff that I'm talking about, not the bribes or the extortion or whatever, but the political stuff where they are working government officials to their political ends, is that you don't have a specific crime. What is really interesting about the Mueller, so I'm going to reach back a little bit because we're going back to 2016, 2017 on the Obama stuff. What is really interesting is that the Mueller report, remember Mueller?
Yeah.
There was an actual indictment returned on that, or language drafted for an indictment in that. And that's what he was charged with investigating. And that indictment, a criminal indictment, which the Justice Department at the time thought passed muster and they could have tried somebody on, involved a conspiracy claim, a conspiracy charge to engage in activities that illegally frustrated the will of the American people by interfering with an election and polluting and contaminating the electoral process. And that was a crime. So this looks an awful lot like that.
Well, but
in terms of its conspiracy charge.
Excuse me for saying it, but you're guilty of, you don't like the Democrats, so you're going to pull one out on them. I watch, if you train the SEC in the last month on trades of everybody coming out of that White House and with paired up with what this guy says on a daily basis,
that is not even comparable.
What I'm saying, they don't look at any of this stuff, Lou. That's the point.
I'm not going to say that. It would not surprise me if they are in fact looking at that. I'm not going to defend.
You imagine how long that person would be in office?
See, this is the problem. First of all, what we're talking about are radically different kinds.
But you pick one out and you say that's important to you. And I pick one out and I say it's important to like a lot of other people. Well, you say, well, mine isn't important and yours is. Well, I can do the same thing.
And I'm saying that your opinion that this is important doesn't hold up when you compare it to a constitutional violation.
I don't think Hillary should have had the thing overseas and got money from foreign people for the election. I know that was wrong.
The insider trading issue is an issue, and I don't like what is happening with whatever their business transactions these guys are putting out. I don't like the monetization of the presidency. But that ship sailed.
It's happened every day.
Well, I mean, in terms of prosecuting it, yeah. that ship sailed. And if they're not going to, you know, we have Biden actually altering government practices in exchange for keeping his son on the board.
And this guy's not altering practices for his own wealth?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if he's using the power of the government to do that.
We need to stop all of it.
I don't like what's happening.
We need to stop all of it. But
that is not the same thing as an attempt to shut down and subvert a presidential election, which is what happened.
What do you mean shut down the election? The election went fine.
The election did not go fine. You had a sitting president who basically was handcuffed by an illegal and completely trumped up, to use the pun, trumped up investigation that involved the co-opting of the U.S. intelligence agencies in deliberately falsifying data to get warrants to listen on people. This was a huge deal.
You're saying there was absolutely no sniff of suspicion why anybody could have connected Trump with the Russians when he went out and said he believes Putin more than the CIA. These kinds
there
of things.
No, no there sniff. There was no credible evidence.
What does credible mean? He borrowed money from those people. They bought all kinds of condos from him. There was a huge history there.
Credible means believed by the government agencies charged with investigating it. There was no credible evidence. Tom, I don't want to get into a huge blow up on this. If you look at the ICA report that was issued, that was disclosed yesterday, I believe. If you look at that thing and read the assertions in there by whistleblowers who are apparently coming forward now, it is crystal clear that they were told to take evidence that the CIA had rejected and blow it up and magnify it such that they would use it as the basis for a report that election interference occurred. And it doesn't get much worse than that, in my opinion. So that's why the Epstein stuff is a sideshow.
It's not a sideshow.
It's important. I think it's important. I would love to find out what was going on.
Are you ready? You and I, by the way, it's interesting for me to argue with somebody I agree with. Would you and I want the job? You know, I'm not young anymore. I used to say, yeah, I'll dive into this with both feet. I don't know if the thing drops on my desk and there's 15 captains of industry, there's 15 different royal families. I don't know that we pursue that. Well, I know we should.
Well,
what are we doing?
I think, remember, we talked about this last week. I think I told you that the most credible explanation for why this stuff is now getting buried, to me, is that there's nothing really criminal in it.
Sure there is.
But there's guilt by association right now. And so they don't have, when I say there's nothing criminal in it, they don't have criminal evidence in there. They don't have smoking gun pictures or recordings or whatever. But they do have a lot of names. And if you're looking at this and you say, if we just drop this out there, every name on this list is going to be pilloried and raked over the coals, and we don't have anything we can do with it. All we're doing is smearing people, and we don't know what the exact involvement was.
But just take the few cases that I'm listening to. It seems like everybody has somewhat of a story, and everybody has a date and a time. And the one lady who... I don't know if I say anything. And
I mean, we don't know that. The only thing that gives you dates are the flight logs.
Okay, well, my point is this particular lady worked. She was going to be an employee of Epstein. And she was there, and somehow or another she was in the same room with him and Maxwell. And they're both groping her. She had two police reports, one in 96 and one in 2006.
Is this the one that committed suicide, or was it
No, she's kind of a mess now, but she's not. She goes, but the police reports they were able to go and get. They just didn't go anywhere. I mean, if that happened today on an L train, it'd be the biggest source of news, for God's sake.
I would love to know what happened on that. But again, if we don't have evidence of anything.
Well, I think that's the point, Luke. These guys are going back. They're coming up with pictures. I hope it's not all AI, but evidently there always was evidence. It just was ignored.
I would love to know the decision making process on that, because I would love to know how our law enforcement people are cutting deals with this guy, or if they were cutting deals with him, or what was happening. You know, it's entirely possible that the reason they didn't go after him is because he was so politically well connected and had blackmail material on so many people that a slew of phone calls went to DOJ and said, "Don't touch this."
I heard some stories yesterday. The people who went down to the island, evidently he had stuff on. He ended up managing all their money, and he put them in an index fund. Okay, now, if I put you in an index fund, I guess I could charge you to manage it, but we really don't. We put in there if you want me to do covered calls or those kinds of things. You know, we charge you for that, but not all that much. Apparently, he was charging 2 and 20, and just putting somebody's money in an index fund.
What is a 2 and 20?
It means he gets 2% up front. He gets 20% all wins, which drops into the carry. And if it's capital gain, he gets to keep the capital gain. Lou, even I that would be unbelievable. That if you have people giving you $1 billion, you got 2% of that, what's that? $20 million, right?
Well, yeah, so again, I would love to know the background on this. I'm just not focused on it.
Why can't somebody, if you send in your tax return, I know people whose parents, let's say, have money, all right, and they want to distribute it to the kids earlier than they croak, basically, right? Well, they're so fixated. I don't even know what the thing is right now, if it's $11,000 or what. They'll only give out like $11,000 a year, because if you pass over that, you got to pay a gift tax.
Right.
That's a small thing. You know, it's not overthrowing a government, but it's a small thing. How does somebody not ask the question? Gee, you just gave a guy a $75 million mansion. Well, it's a little over $10,000, isn't it?
How are we not?
Yeah,
I agree. Listen, these rules. I would love to know what the Epstein rules were.
I don't think there were any. You had something on everybody.
Well, that's what I mean.
Yeah,
you know, we got special rules for this guy. You know,
and people think that even though he's dead, somewhere buried in the bowels of the place, that he's got something on Trump. The fact that Trump dumped him makes me think that maybe he doesn't, or other than just being creepy early on. But that there's no jail for that.
My take on his whether he's got stuff on Trump is measured more along the lines of if there was stuff in that file that implicated Donald Trump, it would have been blasted out all over the place.
I don't think so, because I think there's probably 10 Democrats in there too. I think they just gave them all a pass.
Well, that's so.
If you brought out Trump, you had to bring out Clinton, and you had to bring out what's his name?
That's even worse.
Well, I don't think. Well, first of all, Biden wouldn't have been smart enough. I don't think you could single Trump out without having Clinton and the Prince Harry or whatever the guy's name is in there right with him. How do you pull one guy out of the well?
I think at this stage in his life, it is almost impossible to smear Bill Clinton with sexual allegation conduct or allegations of sexual misconduct.
I mean, I agree.
Do you?
No, I mean, it's water under the dam at this point.
Yeah. So I mean, I, again,
this is interesting, but it's
interesting in sort of the way that the British are apparently getting ready to pass a law that's going to require them to basically empty the British Museum of all its artifacts. You know, it's interesting in a kind of that kind of way, at least at this stage.
Well, I mean, think of it, Lou. You are a high-end attorney, and you've done well in life, and a lot of this stuff doesn't necessarily touch you. But everybody that I know has been accosted on some level by a regulator, by law enforcement, by something, and then they look at everybody else and they go, how come nobody ever touches these guys? They seem to have all the money, and yet they're fine and I'm not. I mean, I think it's a much bigger issue for regular America, not so much, you know, boffing the 14-year-old, I mean, which is horrible, but it's just another stone in the boat that's sinking. You know that
and you are absolutely correct when you say to a segment of the Trump,
not just the Trump
world.
This could be the first issue in five years that both sides agree on.
But you're absolutely correct when you say that for these guys who feel exactly the same way you do, this is an issue. I want somebody in jail. I think it's outrageous that this guy skated. I think it's outrageous that all of these clients skated. My point is, I agree, and I understand why, but it is not something that you know, in the scheme of what's happening right now, this is not an issue.
Okay,
for me.
But
it's out there. Let the investigation run. Do you want the documents disclosed? Yes.
You and I are sometimes when we argue, it's because we're on different levels of the same chessboard. You don't have the conversations with people where, if you say you have an account here at PTI, you got $1 million in there, and you go call my brother and say, Dan, I need you to wire $20,000 to my son. He's buying a new car. I'm helping him out. Dan goes, can't do that. What do you mean you can't do that? It's got to be to your account, or else they're all over us. Yeah, but it's my son. And then you end up pissed at us. So for people like you. Let me get this straight. 4,100 wire transfers from Moscow banks and other places, and nobody looks at it? This is like this is like a hot shiv up your behind to regular people.
Yeah, this is to put it in more contemporary context. This is a Hunter Biden type thing, and so we all understand what was happening with Hunter Biden because it was a kid and vice president's son involved. This is the same level of immunity operating for a private citizen who's a child trafficker.
Yeah, but the money numbers aren't even close. $1 billion was flying in out of one account, Lou.
Well,
this guy took more in a week than Hunter Biden his whole career.
But the principle's the same.
Yeah,
you've got somebody who's immune. Why is he immune? We understand why Hunter Biden was immune. We don't understand why this guy was immune. I want to know why he was immune. I get it.
Well, anyway, but do you think this Cambodia Thailand thing has any chance of blowing up? Or any war, I guess, does, though, right? What do those guys have? What kind of munitions do they have?
They have done this before. They've shot at each other before. As long as it stays focused on this particular territory, I think what's happening right now, based on what I read this or last night and early this morning, is that one of our guys gets killed, we're going to kill one of yours. You guys shoot at us, we'll shoot at you. You guys fire artillery rounds at us, we're going to drop bombs on you.
Is there some basis of hatred here, religion or just culture or anything like that?
I'm sure it's cultural, but I'm sure if you were to go back, I can't say it's racial. I think they're all pretty well.
Careful when you say that.
Well, I mean, I think they're all
like,
pretty much.
It's like saying the Polish guy is the same as the Irish guy. You might not like that so much.
Well, but it's not racial. It's cultural. So I think it's likely cultural. And you know, who knows? Who knows what caused that? I mean, I think it's the same kind of craziness that you've got down in Guyana with Venezuela, where the Venezuelans are now saying that they're entitled to 2/3 of Guyana. Because when the border was drawn back in the 1890s, they drew the border wrong. Maybe something internally is happening in Thailand, and they need a distraction. My understanding, like I said, is that somebody got shot and killed back in at the end of May, a soldier on the border area there, and so they've been sniping at each other, and now it's like a bar, it's like the old bar fight.
Yeah,
you come in, you insult somebody. Then somebody, you know, pushes your drink out of the way. Then somebody throws a drink at you. Then somebody throws a punch. Then somebody grabs a chair. Then somebody pulls a knife. Then somebody pulls a gun.
Lou,
you
ever
escalating like that?
Were you ever talked into or somebody dropped one on you? The Journal of Political Economy comes out like every month.
I haven't read it.
Well, it would come out and they'd have all the different stories of around the world, the big stories. And it was pretty solid. I'd say more of a book than a pamphlet. And it came out every month, and then they had a summary of like every country of what was going on economically in the place. It was like a page and a half, really detailed. And you even when I was young and had more energy, I'd get through like 15 countries, and they all got problems. They all have issues. I'm like, God, I got 40 more to go. I'm getting tired. It's scary how much of this economically, war-wise, worldwide. I mean, I can only imagine if you and I were co-presidents, and we actually attended the security meeting every morning. How long it would take?
So now if you're, my voice is starting to go because I'm talking too much. I do imagine you're coming into the Situation Room for your morning briefing, and you've got Russia, Ukraine. So that fight is essentially stabilizing now. The peace talks are gone. The Ukrainians are asking us to give them more long-range weaponry and release the blocks on the use of weapons that we have given them. So the Russians are importing, something like 2/3 of their.
Yeah, so where are they getting all these drones? Where are they buying them from?
Well, they're buying them from North Korea. They're buying them from Iran. They're producing a bunch of them on their own. So this is all ramping up. You've got Gaza, in which the United Nations apparently has now gone fully Hamas, and is reporting that the Israelis have set up food distribution points and are now shooting anybody who gets near there. which is ridiculous. What's happening in Gaza, why you're seeing all these reports of starvation and everything else coming out of there now, is that the Israelis have basically told the Hamas, if you don't come up and agree to these our ceasefire terms, we're going into Gaza City, where we haven't gone before, and where we believe the hostages that you hold are located. And at this point, the Israelis are effectively saying, we don't care that you've got hostages, we're coming to kill you. And I think that the Hamas, whatever is left of Hamas leadership, is panicking.
Well,
so they're putting these stories out about
it. I know what side you're on this, and I think most people probably are on that side to an extent. But yesterday, there was something about 13 people killed and demanding an explanation from Israel, because evidently it was in one of these sites. And they came back and said, well, we think we got one of the bad guys, and we're looking into the other people. Most people there's a lot of people, Lou, that aren't as schooled maybe in warfare as you are, that aren't ready to take a 14 innocent to one maybe bad guy ratio.
It depends what the circumstances are.
I know that, but I'm saying most people are not ready to do that. And I know some people are. You say all they got to do is surrender, all I got to do this. But the simple fact is the innocent people are innocent people.
Well, the short answer is the citizens of Gaza were celebrating after October 7th. And, you know, this is what happens. They've set these food distribution points up. People are being killed, apparently, at these distribution points. Although, again, I don't think the Israelis can validate it, and I don't think we can either. The reports are all coming out of Hamas news agencies, or Gaza news agencies.
There's a lot of people on the ground, doctors without borders, all those kinds of people that are saying how bad it is. I don't think those aren't just crazy news people. That's what they're saying.
Well, many of them, we do know, for example, that a number of them were working hand in glove with Hamas when times were better for them. I don't know about the starvation. I can't validate that. But again,
well, they're not getting any food. It kind of flows, doesn't it?
But we don't know. I mean, that's the problem. All these reports are coming out of Hamas news agencies or entities that are linked closely to them. So the Israelis are saying we're setting these food distribution points up. We're not allowing the UN to distribute it because that's being stolen by Hamas.
There are
1,000 trucks, food trucks, sitting outside of Gaza right now that can't get in because of either choke points with the UN or choke points with the border crossings. I don't know what the circumstances are.
Any semblance of an economy left? Is there a market?
There never was. The economy of Gaza was aid driven to the tune of billions a month. I mean, we were pumping money in there right and left. It was for the most part being stolen, but there never was an economy there. The Israelis left the place with a potential agricultural setup that they could have used to grow.
You can grow stuff in Gaza. I didn't think you could.
Yeah, the Israelis left a huge expanse of greenhouses and other agricultural operations there. They were destroyed and looted within the first day because they were Jewish. There was no economy. There was no functioning economy in Gaza. And in any event, I think a lot of this is these reports are being driven by the fact that the Hamas is terrified that Israel's coming into Gaza City and
the food trucks can't get in and there's no native food, I'm going to say somebody's probably starving or getting close.
Well, they are setting up food distribution facilities. We know that Hamas has opened fire on people going to these food distribution facilities before. Whether that translates into, you know, the Israelis might be shooting some people, I don't know. My guess is the Israelis have a pretty tight control on their people and they would know if somebody was committing an atrocity. But we don't know. And the short answer is, if it's a high enough Hamas official and he's shielding himself with civilians, they're going to go after him. And if the civilians get killed, the blame for that attack lies with Hamas, not with Israel.
Well, it's What's going on with the Syria thing?
Right now, it appears they've got a tentative ceasefire in place. The denouement of this, Tom, the genesis of this, is as crazy as you can imagine, and it's one of the reasons why this region is basically ungovernable, in my opinion. So this all starts with a carjacking of a, you know, the Druze were in this enclave. One of their merchants is out traveling with whatever. He gets carjacked by some Bedouin, and I use the term Bedouin because these are people that live in Syria, but they come from a particular tribe. A Bedouin tribal.
But we're not talking camels anymore.
No, they're in motorcycles and cars and a bunch of
the Toyota pickup trucks with the Toyota pickup trucks.
A Bedouin criminal gang. They carjack him. They beat him. I think they tried to shave his beard or something like that, which is like the ultimate insult. But they beat him up pretty badly. So the Druze people inside this enclave get infuriated. And they go out after the gangsters, and they apparently catch some of them, and they shoot the place up, and then they go back in the enclave. Well, this stimulates this monster response on the part of the tribal elders, who say, that's it, these people are apostates. And I think I said they're Muslim. They're not really Muslim. They're an Abrahamic religion. They derive from Abraham. Christianity, Judaism, Islam are all Abrahamic religions. They derive from Abraham and his descendants. So they venerate Jesus as a prophet, but not holy. They venerate Muhammad as a prophet, but not holy. But to the people in the region, the Druze are apostates because they had the true vision and they left.
Well, so they do like the Sabbath and that stuff, or do they do?
I don't know about their actual day-to-day kind of thing? Religious practices. I just know how they're viewed by the rest of Islam.
Okay.
And so, because the Jews don't care. The Jews, they're large Druze communities inside Israel. So you end up with a scene that looks like something out of The Road Warrior, where you've got these trucks, cars, motorcycles racing across the desert with these armed guys in them, charging in toward this Druze community.
It's the greatest Toyota commercial in the world, isn't it?
Excuse me, yes. They attack into the Druze community. They massacre, you know, probably several hundred people, I think. There are videos of them forcing, they took videos, like the guys in Gaza did, of them forcing guys to jump off buildings and then shooting them on the way down. They took videos of them shaving the mustaches off of Druze men, making them walk through the crawl through the streets barking like dogs before they're executed. They take video of them executing the members of a
Druze. These guys are waiting
Druze.
Up. They're waiting, laying up at night, waiting for this kind of, thinking about this kind of stuff in case they ever get a chance to do
it. They have to. They take videos of them lining up the entire members of a Druze priest and his family and executing all of them in their front yard, like 25 people. So this people go crazy when this stuff happens. So, Druze counterattack, you get major fighting going on.
Now, what religion says that's okay?
None. In Israel, Druze, members of the Druze community in Israel, charge the Syrian border and try to rush the Syrian border to get into this enclave to defend their brethren. That's why the Israelis come in and say, all right, that's it. This is genocide. We're gonna protect these people. They start bombing. They drop bombs in that area first, and then they go to Damascus, and they tell the Syrians, "You got to stop this." And the Syrian government says, "You know, we'll get to it." They basically put four bombs right down the stovepipe of the Syrian defense headquarters, and blow the place up. And the Israelis say, "We can do this all day. Put a stop to it." The Syrians put their troops in place. It seems to peter out. So right now there's a tentative truce there, but that's how crazy it is there.
We'll talk about it more or less. Was there ever a time? I mean, Lebanon used to be like the Paris of the Mideast, for God's sake. I mean, was there ever a time when these places were somewhat normal? And what was all different about it?
Well, I think you see radical Islam coming in, and that's what's mobilized it. By the way, Hezbollah formally notified the Lebanese government they will not disorganize, will not disband, and will not give up their weapons and come on in and fight us. So there's another flashpoint.
Oh, God. Well, Lou, you take care of yourself. No flashpoints for you. It's 95 here. What's the weather like there?
It's supposed to break 100 this weekend.
Oh, God.
But it's dry. It's a dry heat.
Oh,
to quote the great line in Aliens, it's a dry heat.
Oh, God. Well, take care of yourself, bud. SP Futures right, up 6, NASDAQ Futures up 70. Jimmy, we got our guys?
Yes, we do.
Well, should we just
should
go?
Take a break.
Let's take a 2-second break just to go through some of this stuff, and we'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Back to you, Tom. A little Ozzy.
A little Black Sabbath?
No, that's Ozzy.
Oh, just Ozzy?
On the crazy train.
I saw him a little bit when he was on TV, and God, he was a character. SP Futures up 6, NASDAQ Futures up 73. I'll bet Andrew and Wayne were big heavy metal fans.
Well, I wasn't, but I definitely think we are all on the crazy train now.
I'm Chicago Blues and Motown.
Who'd you like in Chicago Blues?
Oh, Howlin' Wolf. Well, he's Baltimore, but Muddy Waters, Chess Records, all those guys. Willie Dixon, Otis Rush. I saw them all.
Who's the lady that just died? That was her name. I went to see one of her last concerts. Oh, God. What was her name? We used to go see the Siegel Schwal Blues Band every Monday night at the quiet night.
Yeah.
And but there were some.
And of course, Paul Butterfield.
Yeah. Really good stuff. I mean, how do you guys even keep track? Lou talking about there's a new war this morning. I didn't know we had a new war. I guess we got a new war over in Cambodia and Thailand. How does anybody keep track of all this stuff? You guys try to, I know.
No. Well. I've been on that border. I've crossed that border from Thailand and Cambodia, and the border is actually undefined. And it's funny that when you cross from Thailand, I took a bus from Bangkok to Phnom Penh, which is the capital of Cambodia, and the minute you cross the border. You have nice roads all the way in Thailand, but the minute you get into Cambodia, there's potholes, the roads are awful, they're narrow. And I asked a couple of people, why is that? And they said, oh, that's in case that Thailand invades us. We're not going to make it very easy for them. So, it's an old conflict. It goes back to when Pol Pot.
Is there a crossing at the border, or you just drive right through?
Oh, there's several crossings, and it's an interesting area that I crossed into Cambodia. I think the town was called Poy Pet, the first thing that happens when you get on the Cambodian side is if they see a Western guy, you're attacked by children. Who are pretty filthy looking, dirty, and they're after money, or we're talking about Epstein and all, and they're after sex because they're, you know, their parents or somebody's overlooking these kids, and to me it was one of the worst things I've ever seen.
So the economy in Cambodia is nowhere near as good. Now, is that because they don't have a port? Is there a reason for that?
Well, Cambodia, Well, I can't say great things about Thailand and their democracy, but Cambodia, they have a dictator, and he's been there ever since they got rid of Pol Pot. What was that, back in the 80s? His name is Hun Sen. He's very close to the Chinese, but he's basically an oligarch, and he doesn't allow any opposition. And so there's a lot of corruption in Cambodia. Cambodia is a kingdom. They have a king, but they have this guy, Hun Sen, who's a dictator. Basically, you got the same situation in Thailand where the king, you know, it's Les Majest, which, you know, you'll go to jail if you say anything negative about the king there. And they just got rid of the Thai prime minister, the daughter of a former prime minister who got overthrown in a coup. And they got rid of her because she... Somebody had a transcript of a phone call she made to the Thai prime minister where she was waxing eloquent about... I mean, a phone call to the Cambodian prime minister where she was waxing eloquently about this Cambodian guy. And that caused Thailand to get rid of her. I mean, she's now on trial for, like, dare I say this word, treason.
Oh God! Yeah, we were. I was, my definition. I know we have lawyers on the show, not mentioning any names. I thought treason only happened during wartime.
Of course, but
that's
you,
right.
It's a great word to toss around. Try it, treason. You can toss it around at any time, day or night.
Of course, aren't we? If you declare a war on terror that lasts forever, does that count as a war?
Well,
I mean, it's all in the vernacular, right?
I remember Gore Vidal said, you know, a war on terror is sort of like a war on dandruff. It's not terror you're going to. You're going, what's the root cause? It was one of the big issues back when we had that global war on terror.
Well, I'm not so sure it ever ended in some people's minds.
No, of course not. Now Trump, of course, is using it to, talk about the Tren de Agua, Venezuelan terrorist gangs and the roaming around the United States, and it still serves its purpose.
How we've been kind of, well, beaten bits and pieces of the Epstein thing. I'm still amazingly curious how the, and this has, this, you could talk about Epstein or any other different place. You could talk about financial stuff. You could talk about God knows what else. And how some people seem to be, I was reading or listening to a couple of things about this guy from Ohio. Was it Wexman?
Les Wexner.
Yeah, what? And I'm like, all the years of this stuff, and the guy seems to be the original money behind everything, nobody's ever talked to him.
Well, Chief, I was listening to the early part of the show, which I thought was very valuable, because you raised some of these questions there and then earlier today. It happens that on the way to Chicago from D.C., the year, whatever it was, 8 years ago when we first met you, Wayne and I, we stopped in Columbus, Ohio, and we talked to one of the world's leading experts about Wexner. And we got the full background on him. And it's a fascinating story. There are mysteries about it, but much of it's laid out, and it leads very logically to the Epstein situation that we have now. So just to get the maybe high points or low points, first of all, I think Wayne and I both think all of this stuff is much, much worse than people would think. And it does go back in many ways to the beginnings of the Wexner clothing fortune, which Victoria's Secret was only a part of. His main company was called The Limited, also The Gap. And he's the son of a brilliant buyer for a department store in Columbus, Ohio, and grew this kind of clothing empire. And just maybe end the spiel here, in the clothing world, they need models.
Yeah, well, yeah.
So, and where do models come from? And it's in a very logical progression up to befriending Epstein, who we understand spent time in Ohio. And in fact, I'll just mention the name of somebody who we talked with. His name is Bob Fitrakis, and he's a lawyer, community college professor, runs a newspaper, a publishing house, and he wrote a 2009 book, Cops, Cover-Ups, and Corruption. And Wexner is not a major figure in that, but there's about a half dozen references. And he, Bob Fitrakis, gave us kind of a tour of the history of the underside of Columbus, Ohio, from his vantage point of somebody who studies this stuff and has got one foot in the kind of mainstream world of being a professor.
For those that, hang on for a second, for those that don't know, Columbus is fairly unique in that it's a county or a state capital, and not Cleveland or Cincinnati, and it also has a massive university there. So it has really some economic chops to it that is somewhat recession-proof. My Italian side of my family is all from there. I've been to Columbus 100 times.
Oh. Well, in Ohio State, there's another story, but it's all, in some ways, middle America, bucolic, but there's a long-standing underside, including there was organized crime in Ohio.
There's a lot of mob there. A lot of mob there.
So that's kind of the preview if you want to go further. Or the bottom line, it's all much worse than you'd think.
Whole areas.
Also, you know, you've got Wexner's name plastered all over Ohio State, including the sports health center where, of course, this Dr. Strauss, you know, had sexually assaulted, I don't know, hundreds of, I mean, they were of age, they were 18 and older, but, and now we have Jim Jordan, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, was just deposed in a major lawsuit by some of these former wrestling students, team members. And it's, you know, so here you have Jordan sitting in the Judiciary Committee overseeing the Justice Department, which is not going to release the, or been reluctant to release the Epstein files. And you got Jordan who's being sued by his former wrestling team members over sexual assault. Now they're saying that he knew what was going on, but one of his former wrestling team members just the other day stated that, hey, Jordan was in the shower with this guy Dr. Strauss and his team members. So that puts a whole different light on that subject.
The Italian community there is not, I don't know where I'm going with this, but it's not the Sicilian group that you would see in, you know, Godfather and so forth. It was my Italian group always across essentially from Rome. So there's a big group there. It's the Sons of Giulianova, which is the town, and there's the Abruzzi Club, which is the province. There's a lot of people that came from Italy into Columbus that have kind of stayed together with people they came over from Italy with. it doesn't make them gangsters. I mean, just saying that it's a big Italian community there in Columbus. You wouldn't normally guess there that. And for a time, it was the only city in Ohio that was over 1 million people, right? Not Cincinnati or Cleveland. I mean, it's much more of a factor than people would think. Because they don't have major league baseball teams, so nobody, or football team, nobody pays attention to them. But in fact, they're probably more important than even it's hard to say, Cleveland or Cincinnati, right?
The other thing is they were very politically influential during the McKinley administration because his sort of they didn't have chiefs of staff in the White House then, but his main guy was Hanna, who was from Columbus.
Well, I this thing has been is somewhat interesting on a bunch of levels for me, because one of them is it's probably the first issue where the far left and far right have agreed on in ages. it's the first time, honestly, that I, in my opinion, I've seen Trump have a misread of his people and actually go back at him. Not just his people, but he thinks that everybody wants his disclosure, which of course the judge just stopped last night, right? The grand jury stuff. People don't want disclosure. They want these people prosecuted like they would be prosecuted.
The Oversight Committee, though, the Democrats pulled a fast one on this guy, James Comer, who's, I call him Comer Pyle. He's like from the backwoods down by the holler. But he wanted to adjourn the Oversight Committee, but the Democrats forced the vote for the DOJ to release all the Epstein files, and it passed 8-2.
God. But now the judge won't let it, right? So the judge.
No, the judge. That's the grand jury testimony. Okay. It's the DOJ files, and we're getting a kind of a look at what's in there with, of course, the Wall Street Journal expose on this birthday album that was put together by Ghislaine Maxwell for Epstein's 50th birthday, with some sort of body. Entry from Trump.
Well, it's helpful, I think, to have some fairly clear definitions about what we're talking about, even though a lot of it's secret, of course. When most people would think of the Epstein files, there's probably an important distinction. Most people would say, what's all the stuff? And going back to even stuff that hasn't been officially investigated, let's say late 80s, all the way through to his death. And that's not one file organized in, subfolders. That's the whole shebang. And for much of that, it's clear to those who have looked at this stuff that he, Epstein, and Trump were very, very good friends till about 2004. And so Trump would be heavily involved in stuff that you think of as the big picture. But when you're talking about things like grand jury testimony, or stuff that it grows out of the prosecution of Epstein, that's much more recent and after the break of Trump and Epstein. So, in a sense, part of the reason that some of the people in the Trump administration wouldn't be unhappy if grand jury testimony came out is that it's kind of Trump-aligned prosecutors who are prosecuting Epstein about stuff after he more or less broke off with Trump. So Trump really wouldn't be in grand jury.
But they broke up over some argument on a real estate deal, right? Allegedly.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they were both after a place down in Palm Beach, which is like Billionaire Island, and so Trump edges out Epstein, and then that's when they had their falling out. And then Trump immediately flips that real estate over to a Russian oligarch, and made, you know, made a fair piece of change on that. But what Andy was saying, that there's really no, you know, paper file. I'm looking right now at the FBI description of what they confiscated from Epstein's properties after he was arrested back in 2019. It gives you an idea that, these aren't all paper files. One peach massage table, one green massage table, one beige massage table, one box containing 12 frame
Which
photos.
Color? Which color would you have picked if you had your choice?
I don't know, but maybe Dershowitz. You know, he said, you know, he kept his underpants on when he got a massage at Epstein's place. I don't know what color, but here's it's funny to how sometimes the FBI, you know, they're not, you know, they kind of mess up when they're inventorying these items. But I'm looking at, it says one box containing one pair of black women's cowboy boots. Now I think they meant to say one pair of women's black cowboy boots. Now yeah. I don't know.
I guess the question I have, and you guys are maybe closest to be able to answer this, how does the Democratic senator came out and was, what was his little group? Somehow he was privy to the one of the accounts in the 4,100 money in and out and the billion dollars.
Why didn't from Oregon?
Yeah. Now he said, how did he become privy to that? He was in some double secret committee somewhere, but. How does that? I mean,
he got access to were over 4,000 suspicious activity reports, which is something the Treasury Department keeps track of. It's actually the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, FinCEN, and if it's over a certain amount of money, I used to know the threshold. It may be,
it's like 11 grand or something.
Well,
yeah. I mean, in cash. Right. I don't know about wires and stuff. But.
Yeah.
But how does?
I mean, yeah, that's what.
Wherever he was, if the three of us are sitting in a room and we'll bring Jimmy with us, how does somebody say, this looks like the job for the IRS? They're up everybody else's behind. Is this payment to Epstein? Was it income? Was it a gift? I mean, did he pay taxes on the income? I mean, how does these guys just go scot free? If somebody, yeah. I mean,
if you're an agent at the IRS, or investigator at Securities and Exchange, or at the Justice Department, or FBI, you have to make a career decision. Maybe with your spouse, maybe with your clergy, your priest. Do I investigate and risk my job? Because most of us in the public were raised to think they're out there looking for tips, ready to investigate. But the reality is, and increasingly, but it's always to some extent been like this, that just as you were saying earlier in the show, Tom, with Kevin, if you go after the wrong people, the connected people, you're finished. And you're lucky if it's only getting transferred to some horrible job. And we know that happens.
I was thinking more of the top down. When the senator finds out about this, how does he not pick up the phone to show my age? And call the head of the IRS and say, are you guys looking at this?
No, to call who? So he's on the Intelligence Committee, and he can raise an issue. And I've talked with him about dirt, and he was giving a talk at the Libertarian Cato Institute talking about some similar stuff. And I went up to him, and I said, you got three people in the audience who know all kinds of things. And it was like showing the cross to Dracula. He and his staff wanted to get the hell out of there. And I said, you just gave a talk about something. There's people in there that you could get to testify to your committee. And he didn't want to hear about it. He wanted to raise the alarm.
And then scatter.
Guy, but skedaddle out of there because they don't necessarily have the power. They can write a letter, but the people who are writing a letter to are going to ignore them. They don't have that much power.
Well, I mean, I again, it's all about how you use it. I mean, you know, in my little world at the CBOE, if one of the firms just would not listen to you, and we didn't have anybody that was like that, they thought they had all the power, but all you had to do, what would look like, you know, Wayne and Andrew Brokerage suspended from the CBOE from a day on the top of the Wall Street Journal. Nobody would be. You actually had the power, but it was like a sledgehammer power. I mean,
Well, it's great for the crooks if the system works to keep everybody else honest, but the crooks find their way, like Epstein and others, to loot the system, and everybody's happy if the system cracks down on the ordinary.
Well, who was the bank? People. Who was the bank? This is a few years ago. Was it the Barclays somebody in Washington? I thought where they went after those guys and they said that you guys are housing these money launderers, because look at all the reports of, you know, suspicious transactions that you filed with us. Well, you filed the report, so those guys are supposed to look at it. The bank is not the FBI. But they ended up turning on the bank, didn't they? Was it Barclays?
You want to know one freaky thing about all this? Right after Epstein died, either by suicide or by strangulation by another inmate, the money started moving again in Epstein's accounts, and that money is still moving. It's his estate. His estate is moving money.
Well,
how does that happen?
Well, the connections that I've been, and this the thing is bizarre about this is you can listen to all these. I didn't know there were so many people on podcasts, but every one of them seems to have some little nugget there that they found someplace that is the connection between him making this guy in Ohio pay all this money to be a big benefactor of essentially the Israeli Secret Service, and he was giving money to the home country, you know, being Jewish and everything. And Epstein sort of, I can only imagine what he managed to broker on the other side of this thing. Hey, I got a guy here, I can force you to give you a bunch of dough. What do I get out of it? And or what do you want from me? I mean, somewhere, and then the money coming like from Russia. And you had all the allegations early on, and, you know, like Lou would say, they weren't of Trump's connections to Russia. And, you know, I'm not saying he... All of a sudden, this all starts to create... It looks like a big spider web.
30 seconds.
I mean,
And
I, you know, I don't know... None of it comes down to... I just don't know, if I'm a senator, why I would leave the room if somebody said you had evidence right here. It's like the guy wants to be the town crier, but doesn't want to do anything. I would have no problem calling the IRS and say, hey... What are you guys doing? Here's 4,100 transactions. Why don't you take 10% of them and look at them?
Well, that's why we need we love your show, and why we need people like you in office. When they get tips, follow it up. Don't just give a speech, look like a good guy, and then run away. Now, his specific excuse was that he had no power to call witnesses, only his chairperson, Dianne Feinstein, and I thought to myself, and I maybe told some people, look, the guy's a three-term U.S. senator, and they're always asking for money to get reelected, and he doesn't even have power to recommend a witness be called.
Hey, how about we go to break, and let's talk about that when you beg. The pecking order in the Senate and the House, I think a lot of people right and left, I don't understand it, so I'm going to ask you, but they're pissed off at it. I mean, they don't see their representative or their senator doing anything. It's all coming from somebody else. It's really kind of weird. SP Futures up 3. NASDAQ Futures up 63. We'll come back. I got a couple of earnings we should talk about. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some may be embedded tax issues.
The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are or what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
We're back.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. Tim Lohmer on the board. S&P futures up 3. NASDAQ futures up 59. Individual stocks in play. Tesla's down almost $21 at 6%. As a car revenue actually was down a little bit. Google, or Alphabet, I guess, is up $7, so they're pretty decent. IBM, which has been one of the stalwart performers this year, whack whack, down $18, which is a little crazier because they were actually up yesterday during the day before this came out. So. They were trading, I think, 285 yesterday, and I was a little bearish in here, and we did a spread at the 280 level. Now it's 264. I guess I wasn't bearish enough, but hopefully we'll squeeze out of that one without any issue. But it's kind of crazy because IBM has been really, really strong. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 106.4%, FTSE up 91. That's a full 1%, and CAC is actually unchanged, which is kind of weird, but. French software giant Dassault Systems drops 8% after earnings miss. Probably one of the reasons why that they are not up. Nikkei up 655, 1.6%. The Topix, Tokyo's Topix, that's not the Nikkei, it's record high. Hang Seng up 129.5%, Shanghai up 23.6%. We've got bonds, which ran up yesterday, began today up 4 basis points, 4.42 on the 10-year. And I've got the 30-year, 4.98, which is pushing towards 5 again after being down to 4.9, so it's running back up. The Bund up 7 basis points, 2.68. Japan up a basis point, 1.61. Oil up 69 cents, but still mired in the mid-60s, 65.94. Brent up 61 cents, 69.12. Natural gas up 6 cents, 3.13. We've got gold down $31, 33.66 after maybe this has been a down week for gold. Same thing with silver, down 15 cents, 39.35. Copper up 5 cents, 5.87. So copper is like really up there with this, with the tariff being on that. It's up, it started 5 hours before all that started. Foreign exchange, dollar's up a little bit with the euro at 117, although that's kind of where it's been. Same thing with the pound, 135.4. We've got crypto is up $70, 118.495. Jimmy, Air Force traffic, weather, sports, Cubs, no good.
That's right, Chief. The Cubs lost last night to the Royals 4-8. The White Sox did beat the Rays 11-1. The Diamondbacks lose to the Astros 3-4. And obviously this weekend is the second half of the Crosstown Classic. This time it will be at The Rate. On traffic, inbound Kennedy from Montrose, 36 minutes. Inbound Kennedy from Lake Cook, 46. Inbound Eisenhower from the Wolf. From Wolf is 38 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th is 20. And the inbound Stevenson from 294 is at 33 minutes. Back to you, Chief.
You guys, this has been an on and off theme on the show for kind of a while. And the guy who probably started it was Carl. I don't know if he wanted to, but he did. We're talking about a friend of his that he helped become a U.S. rep in Florida. And how when the guy got there, he had to turn, he had to use their cell phone, and if he didn't jump when they said, you know, how high, that he never got any committee assignments after two terms, he couldn't wait to get the hell out of there. And I guess I've been on a board, I've been on committees, and as time went by, I became chairman of, you know, three or four different committees over time. And there's a certain amount of, I use the term, respect for the person who actually does the work and learns something every year and gets people on there and moves people along. And it's a little bit of power, but it's it's only a little bit. I mean, other people, their vote was as strong as mine. It seems like somehow in Congress, people have the sense that that's. I mean, I don't know. I mean, Feinstein was on the chairman of this guy's committee for a long time, and you know, she's been there a while. She was on a bunch of different. Let's say the lady deserves some respect. I mean, maybe a lot. And I'm not so sure though. If I'm sitting there going, "Boy, this stuff needs to go to the IRS. This looks pretty creepy to me." I would, if she said, "No, we're not doing that," I'm not so sure I would stop at that. Maybe that's my personality, but what gives her the right to say we're not going to prosecute a bunch of sleazebags when other people are getting prosecuted? I mean, I don't know where that comes from necessarily.
Well, that's where the good old leaks come from in D.C. keeps journalists busy. Yeah, there's a lot of people in committee chair and ranking committee positions that act as gatekeepers. But you know, the one thing you can be guaranteed of, and Trump is finding this out right now in a big way, is you just can't keep secrets in Washington, even if they're national security secrets. You can't keep the secrets.
Well, I'm not talking about that. I'm saying you can tell me that the committee is not going to make a formal, but you can't tell me not to call them.
Well, that brings up the other thing, you know, the pecking order in Congress is if you start to look like a malcontent, you may find that, oh, geez, we got to give this guy your office. You're going to have to move down where there's, you know, a window looking out at a wall. So they're more than capable of doing things like that.
The only problem with that is who's they?
It's the House Speaker, the Chairman of the House Administrative Committee, who actually has the title, the mayor of Capitol Hill.
Really?
Quote, unquote.
And there's a web of regulations and laws. And so let's take the Intelligence Committee, which is what the Oregon senator we're talking about is on, and Dianne Feinstein was chairman of. Well, first of all, she was almost comatose by the time she died. The last year or two, she was totally out of it. But to go back in time, quick anecdote, the chairman of it used to be a very distinguished man, Bob Graham, three-term U.S. senator, former two-term governor of Florida. And I hit it off with him by buying his book. And
is this Wendy Graham's husband?
No. He's actually the stepbrother of Donald Graham, publisher of the Washington Post, which gets to the point of my anecdote. So I met him when he was talking about a book he wrote, a fictional book about a very distinguished governor senator who was killed because he knew too much. And so the mystery book unravels. Well, it's actually was a novel about what secrets he knew and how it was very dangerous for him to talk about him as chairman of the committee. And so the point of it is, if he had talked about what he knew, he could have been prosecuted and then in his kind of fictional novel, maybe murdered. So I met him outside.
Or maybe just murdered without prosecuting.
Yeah, I mean,
why go through all that trouble if you can just kill him?
Right.
So to fast forward to my anecdote, I really wanted to meet him, and he's based in Florida, retired. He ran for president in 2004, didn't get anywhere. But he comes up, and we meet right at a coffee shop right across the street from the White House, where he had a meeting in the old executive office building. And he starts out by saying, "Isn't it crazy we've got to meet?" Well, he says, "What do you want to talk to me about?" You know, and I'm like a blogger. His stepbrother is publisher of the Washington Post, Donald Graham. And I said, whatever you want to talk about, Senator. So we get into, you know, confidentially some of the stuff he wanted to talk about. And then he says, isn't it crazy we've got to meet like this? And I'm thinking, yeah. I mean, but that shows the web of restrictions that people operate under, even if they want to talk about something, and even if they're chairman of a committee. The stuff he wanted to talk about was stuff he learned when he was chairman.
You know, I had a similar meeting with the guy who was the special ambassador for the State Department for the international trafficking of women and children. And he resigned from that position. This was under, Obama. W. Bush. And we met at a coffee shop down near the State Department. And I got there. I always get there a little early to kind of scope out the place, make sure. The funny thing is, I got there. He was already there doing the same thing. He beat me by 10 minutes. And the whole thing, he kept looking around, and he was very, very paranoid. He was actually, his profession, he was an attorney out of Chicago. I forget the guy's name now, but it's, you know, paranoia, it's one of the things that people have for breakfast in Washington, D.C.
Well, you know, I'm not telling you guys anything, but it's there. I don't know if it's just human stuff or whatever, but you know, I'm one of the few people who am not a MAGA dude, but I will agree with the MAGA people on a lot of stuff. I mean, it's kind of what sets me apart. I mean, I don't have a problem agreeing with somebody else that I normally would disagree with. When I was on the, I ran for the board. I told you guys this. I'll be brief because I probably told it before. When I ran for the board of the SIBO, a guy who helped me out was a guy named Larry Bloom. And Larry was one of the original guys on the SIBO, and then when the building, they built the building, which is now vacant, he was on the building committee and did an amazing job, and he did it right for himself by getting a couple of parking places near the place. But when I ran for the board, he says to me, I'll help you, anything you want, I'll help you, but you got to promise me one thing. And I go, sure, Larry, what is it? And he goes, if you ever find out who really runs the place, you got to tell me who it is. You know, he says, I can't, and you know, it was somewhat eerie. I had a 6-year term, and it ended up being I was against all this electronics, not because I still wanted to see runners running around, but because it could have been done in a way that was inclusive, and it wasn't. It was done in a way that was exclusive, where a few people make all the dough, and I just didn't want that. I wanted to open for more people. I actually opened for customers more so than it is, but that, you know, that didn't go over too well, but It is eerie. You get this feeling that there's stuff shows up on the agenda, or it's not even on the agenda and it shows up afterward, and it's out of the blue. And then I was pretty good friends with the people up there. They all pretty much trusted me. I said, was that your idea? No, at first I heard of it too. And I'm like, wait a minute. You sit right next to the chairman's office. I don't know where that one came from. Then you ask, like, the vice chairman, where did that come from? I just heard about this. There's this, what you guys are just talking about is a ranking senator afraid to say something because somebody's watching him. The people that put Trump in office and are very strident about this, and there's a lot of people on the other side that if they thought about it would feel the same way, that's exactly what they don't want. And I... The older I get, the more something somewhere has to happen. I wouldn't want to be the person to do it because I just have this idea as I get more mature and talk to people like you that the problem would be really tough. You'd almost need a Gestapo agency to root these people out. You'd have to become what you detest to fix it.
Well, exactly, and yeah, the Gestapo agency doesn't report to the people.
Well, that's the point. I mean, I'd need a group, if it was me or you guys, if all of us were together, We would need a secret group that nobody knew anything about, that every time we found something about somebody, before it leaked out to them and they lawyered up and whatever else they could do, we'd have to get 60 names together, and we'd have to get them. I mean, I know that's what have to happen in the pharmaceutical industry. People that absolutely are breaking every sort of combination and restraint of trade, every sort of pricing that isn't justified. How many people and how many boards did we have to arrest in 1 week to fix it?
Well, we actually theoretically have a system like that. It's just a question of getting the right people in with the right incentives. And it starts with, let's say, whistleblowers, and then investigative reporting, and then credible media picking up on it, and then authorities doing something about it. And that's the theoretical system we have, but at every juncture of it, there's pressure to divert, keep, suppress, or create some new agenda as a distraction. And let me just add, maybe this is a good time for it, is that Wayne is coming to Washington next week to get an award, a Lifetime Achievement Award, at the National Press Club at the Whistleblowers Summit and Film Festival. And they're going to give Wayne an award for his investigative reporting, Lifetime Achievement, this Whistleblowers group. And so he's... And people,
which I've got mixed emotions about, because, you know, when they start giving you Lifetime Achievement Awards, that means you probably don't have much time left.
Well, with the work Wayne's been doing, the smart money is at beginning in the 1980s, he didn't have much time left, but he's outwitted him.
But every time you talk about somebody doing this stuff, and oh, by the way, it's terrific work. Who's the something that we talk about? I mean, you guys keep talking about there's pressure. There's pressure to do this, pressure to that. Unless you can find the person who or persons that are applying the pressure and yank them by the scruff of the neck and throw them in jail, how does it ever end?
Well, we keep up the fight. I mean, I'm doing a lot of reading about World War II and other battles. I just came across a thing that the actor we know is Charles Bronson, and also James Garner. They both had heroic World War II things when they were nobodies. And I'm sure that...
Well, Hollywood is littered with people like that, by the way.
About Charles Bronson, they said the first time he had three meals in his life in one day was when he was in the Army, and he became a hero. And so the tough guy stuff is not an act. He was seen and did things.
Well, wasn't David Niven a behind enemy lines guy for the
absolutely.
The
and we often forget about the OSS guys who were, you know, Sterling Hayden, who played General Jack Ripper in Dr. Strangelove. And by the way, this is the 45th anniversary of the death of Peter Sellers, who played three parts in that. But Sterling Hayden was in the OSS and dropped behind enemy lines in Nazi-occupied Yugoslavia, where his first mission was to establish contact with the communist partisans under Marshal Tito.
Yeah, those guys were built to sturdier stuff, I think, some of those dudes.
Well, and they had no guarantees of success. You know, you just do it for your country, and because you're, in some cases, drafted, but you just do it.
What do you think, what are the chances of, a lot of the guys in Hollywood volunteered. David Niven, when he wasn't drafted by the UK, went back there, didn't he?
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, a lot of Americans, even before Pearl Harbor Day, December 7th, a lot of them went to Canada and joined the Royal Canadian Air Force. Others went to Britain and joined the Royal Air Force.
Well, who were the guys that went to China in the John Wayne movie?
The Flying Tigers. Yeah, they were sort of like a private military company before we had that that abbreviation.
Well, I think what's a lot of stuff that's happening. I mean, it all kind of keeps this big circle, and I think if people really believe, I know now, you know, we got this thing going, Obama, and we have you know, just talking to Lou a little bit about Gabbard, and there's all that, but these things are all this constant distraction right and left. I think is the work of whoever is actually in charge.
Yeah,
it comes from the playbook of Roy Cohn, who was, you know, of course, Trump's mentor, attorney, and buddy in the nightclub circuit and after hours. But it's the phrase, which I think originally comes from Claire Booth Luce, the wife of Henry Luce, the founder of Time Magazine, is deny, deflect, denounce. So look at the pattern these days.
Well,
you deny that there's anything there, you deflect, and you make treason charges against Obama, Hillary Clinton, and all this stuff.
Yeah,
and
that's
then
right.
You denounce.
And I looked at what Tulsi Gabbard released, this 41-page document, is supposed to show that Obama and Hillary Clinton did all these nefarious things. Yeah, as a former member of the U.S. Intelligence Committee myself, I worked for the NSA back in the 80s. I was gobsmacked to read that Tulsi Gabbard has a supporting documentation to say that Hillary Clinton was mentally ill in 2016 and that she was being given drugs and she was suffering from severe depression, was some intercept or of a Russian intelligence agency report on Hillary Clinton. So if our director of national intelligence is now relying on Russian intelligence reports to prove treason by Obama, Hillary, Biden, and whoever else, I'd say we've fallen very hard, because anyone who would believe Russian intelligence reports has a screw loose, and of course I think Tulsi Gabbard does. But that I couldn't believe what I was reading.
And a footnote is, in this cat and mouse world, people will put out phony intelligence knowing it's going to be intercepted to mislead. And in fact, isn't that part of the story of the Normandy invasion?
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, the fact that it came from overhearing Russian intelligence doesn't mean it wasn't created to be phony Russian intelligence.
Well, as somebody who constantly looks at the cash value of this, and we have a few minutes, I think when people see these incredible dirty tricks played by just about everybody, I mean, Hillary had no problem getting a foreign, people paying money into a foreign, whatever you want to call it,
foundation.
Yeah, a foundation, knowing that was really part of a campaign contribution. I mean, that shouldn't happen. I mean, a lot of things that these people do that they seem, but the fact is, all these elections, I mean, you know, Trump was telling people we're eating cats and dogs. The amount of money that's the difference between the people who back one side or the other. Of course, the people I'm worried about are people that back both sides, and I think they're the ones we really got to worry about. But the amount of scratch that has gone different directions under the, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it, under the Trump administration than the Biden administration, or maybe it would have been the Harris administration, or the Johnson administration, the city versus the other guy who could have won, is the amount of, I think when we're talking trillions of dollars, I can't even grasp it. You guys are closer to it. We're talking, you know, billions of dollars flying from one people's backers to the other.
Yep.
The enormity, to think that they wouldn't pull some election dirty trick to secure that spot, if they wouldn't do it, the people behind them sure as hell would, right? Well, I mean, it's enormous, the dough. We're not talking about Harry Truman, who worked for his presidential salary, right?
Yeah, and this was the problem with Citizens you know, the decision, Citizens United decision by the Supreme Court, that cash is free speech. I think, you know, that said, okay, you know, throw as much cash into these political campaigns as you'd like, because it's all protected as constitutional free speech.
And that was a 5-4 Supreme Court decision overturning the campaign finance system of the United States. And Clarence Thomas's wife, Virginia Thomas, set up a private consulting company before the decision to advise people on how to take advantage of the decision, which hadn't been announced. And I tried to interest some groups in this scandal here in Washington, and there were, you know, kind of progressive groups, and part of the message was, well, look, we litigate in the courts, and our donors expect us to get a nice hearing in the courts. We can't attack Supreme Court decision making. And I thought, what the heck is this? It's a kabuki theater. You're pulling your punches because you don't want to antagonize the judges, and then you're filing lawsuits that go to the people that you know are corrupt, but you don't want to say it.
Is there any hope for us on this? It seems like it's getting, as it gets worse and worse, the population is being left in the dribble. I don't think people feel they have any hope of fixing it, whichever side you're on. And I think if you actually stuck people in a room from both sides and looked at the issues, at least I think both sides could agree on the issues, even though some people, I think, blindly follow one side versus and blindly follow the other. And whenever I look at any of the work on either side, I find it somewhat less than rigorous. But I don't know which ones I think are worse, the progressive side or the other side. I mean, they both don't ever seem like they check their facts. I mean,
right now we're almost in August, which people say, well, nothing happens in Washington in August because everybody's gone. But if you look at past scandals, a lot of them have broken in August.
They figure everybody's just on vacation.
The one thing I'll leave is Trump wanted this whole thing to go away. They say he's shouting at people in the White House now. What's his Epstein? The thing that may advance it well into August now is last night's first episode this season of South Park. Now, I've only seen bits of it, but it's not suitable for the workplace. I'll just put it that way.
Well, I mean, but I think that he, like I said, the man has a terrific read of certainly his people and really a lot of people, and what's pissing them off. And I think he's got a wrong one on this one. His people want these guys in jail. They don't want to read it, the 100,000 documents.
Well, that's right. When you see the Republicans like Marjorie Taylor Greene agreeing with her Democratic counterparts and vice versa, you wonder what universe you've just popped up into, you know?
Like I said,
let me try to tackle your question about what can be done. I know we're at the end of the
show. No problem. We'll sneak over a minute.
But I think what can be done is, regardless of whether our efforts change the system, we can feel good about ourselves in our circle if we try to do the right thing, as you're doing with the show, Tom, and as your listeners, I'm sure, are doing because they're listening in. And, you know, again, just like World War II, any of these individuals couldn't affect the outcome except in their own sphere. And I think they'd feel better about it, and each person can feel better if we attempt to correct things, whether it's effective or not.
Well, I mean, you definitely have to keep trying. I mean, what did Rick say to Laszlo? He said, "We all try, but you succeed." once in a while, somebody's got to succeed, right? I mean, I mean, I know in my industry, I feel very disappointed that I didn't do more. I mean, because I, you know, and it's funny when you reflect on stuff. I mean, I see on Thursday night, we usually go out with a couple of former traders, and some of them are working for the exchange and so forth, and some of the younger people come by and are nice people, and it is so different that the people who are 25 years old. I didn't come to the floor till I was 30. I had already had other jobs, so I was kind of unusual in that regard. I guess I was more seasoned or old. I was at least older, whatever that meant. And everybody felt that the next day was going to be a good day. I'm gonna clerk for this guy, then I'm gonna clerk for that guy, and then somebody else is gonna notice me, and I'm gonna do something else. He might make me a brokerage clerk or a market maker clerk, and one of these days I'm gonna get a chance to trade on my own, or I'm gonna get a job with a firm where it's a real job. There was always the next day was gonna be a good day. You had fun, which I don't know how many people have that anymore. But you also had a vision of you could by your own behind, you could move up the chain. None of these kids have that. And they're all way more educated and than a lot of the people I knew on the trading floor. They have no. I'm going to be working for OCC forever. I'm going to be in regulation forever. There's no career path for me. I'm never going to be able to trade. I'm never going to learn how to manage money for people. I'm never going to do any of that stuff. Because guess what? Five firms do all, or six or whatever, do all what 1,000 people used to do, or 2,000 people. And maybe you go to work for them, and maybe you work 60 hours a week, and they give you all the rice you can eat, or whatever. It's when people have these kind of, if all of a sudden the government doesn't look like it's doing much, nobody's going to want to do like you guys do, because you guys still feel that that your efforts are going to have some benefit. What if you get to the point where you don't think they're going to have any benefit at all? Then what?
Well, we all have AI now looming,
yeah.
That can replace all these professions and areas of specialty, and journalism is included in that.
That's the latest excuse for stocks being overvalued. sort of like what was it, the cloud, China, B2B, click-throughs, whatever. Anyway, guys, good stuff. Are you guys doing any traveling, or what are you doing? You're just locked in your various hot spots.
I've got to travel to Washington in a few days to get this award, which...
Well, good. We'll talk about when is that? Early next week.
Yeah, when is it, Andy? Wednesday.
No, it's next Wednesday, and I've got to prepare for Wayne coming to town because he's got a lot of friends here who, when he's down in Florida, they keep saying, "What's Wayne doing?" Now they get to hear.
Well, you guys will be picking up some liquor tabs, I assume. Anyway, have a nice.
That might be part of the program.
Okay, I would hope so. Have a nice time talking to you guys next week. SP Futures. Down 25 cents, they were up, and NASDAQ futures up 41, not much going on. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.